Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel. Let's get straight to the docket. The DA wants Barry Morphew back in custody. How is she going to do it? Second, Dr. Michael Bodden says it's unusual not to release the cause of death as it relates to the Gabby Petito matter, and I agree. The Zodiac Killer has been identified. You can't threaten people, even if you do it in sign language. Another teacher is in trouble. Guess what for again? And then finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel, the channel where a practicing criminal defense attorney explains the facts, the procedures, and the law to cold cases and current actual true crime cases. And just to show you that this is really what I do, well, I can't show you, but before I came in here, I was looking at video, body cam video, in a double homicide, okay? This is a nice break, I assure you. All right, if you haven't done so already, please hit that subscribe button, hit the thumbs up, hit that little bell so that you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. As you may recall, we had the entire Chad Daybell change of venue hearing yesterday, and then we also went live in the evening like we do every Tuesday night, and we also had our Patreon show. Now, don't forget, if you can't watch the show on Facebook or YouTube, you can download not only this show, but all past Crime Talks on your favorite podcasting apps like Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Android, Amazon, Audible, you name it. We're on every one of them. All right, let's quickly talk about the people that support us. Okay, go to crimetalkprep.com. And some people, I don't know why some people get all fired up about this stuff, okay? If you don't want to use the product, you don't have to. They've come to us. Yes, we get paid, but the reality is if you don't like it, don't do it. But you need to be prepared, okay? I told you the other day, I go to Costco and they're rationing toilet paper again. I go to get a new tire for my car and they tell me it's a 6-week shortage. And then I was talking to one of the people in the office today and she says stuff is short supply in the grocery stores. That's some of the stuff. I'm like, okay, so I look it up. And on the FDA website, what do they say? There's currently no nationwide shortages of food, although in some cases, inventory of certain food and grocery stores might be temporarily low before stores can restock. Well, what does that mean? Well, I think that means expect shortages as things go. You just, in today's world, you never know what's going to happen. You need to be prepared. So go to crimetalkprep.com, claim your 3-month emergency food kit. In today's world, you just don't know exactly what's going to take place. If you go to Crime Talk Prep, you go to the link, you'll receive $100 off the best-selling 3-month emergency food kit, and this food stays edible to eat for up to 25 years. Listen, if you want to be responsible, I encourage you to do so. If this is not your thing, don't worry about it. Have a nice day. It's not a big deal. But you always have to be prepared. You have to be able to take care of yourself, your family, when the unexpected hits. All right, let's move on to the docket. Now, as you may recall, when Barry Morphew was given a bond, the district attorneys were a little shocked and surprised that a bond was set. The court set the bond at $500,000 cash only, and he was allowed to post that bond, cash only, by Monday and was out. Now, he awaits his trial, which is now set for May 3rd of 2022, and obviously, Barry Morphew is facing murder charges for the allegation that he killed his wife, Suzanne Morphew, who mysteriously disappeared on Mother's Day weekend back in 2020. Obviously, we all know her body has not been found. Well, the company who is now overseeing the GPS monitoring of Barry Morphew is now saying that they cannot track him at his current address due to the remote location. And given Morphew's location, the district attorney's office has released a statement asking the court to reconsider Morphew's bond since he can't be tracked at his current residence. The district attorney's office also added to the statement that they believe Morphew is living close to witnesses who will testify in his 2022 trial. Now, according to the court documents, Lauren Schraff, the intervention coordinator in Chaffee County, apparently has some sort of social relationship with one of the Morphew children. And the documents also says maintenance of the GPS unit will be through the Fremont County office, what they call their intervention office, and will be monitored through the Jefferson County intervention office. Now, in addition to traveling outside of Chaffee County to meet with his attorneys, Barry Morphy was permitted to also leave the county to service and maintain his GPS unit. Now, the director of the Intervention Inc. said in a statement, due to the lack of communication and location points, Intervention is unable to provide the court with any battery or tamper alert information when the defendant is at or near his residence. What is tamper or battery information? Well, if the battery is running low, the intervention office will get a an alert. If they believe that the ankle monitor is being tampered with in some particular way, they'll get an alert. Victims will be notified, prosecutors will be notified, and more than likely the police will be notified as well to go check on that. And as a result of that, the intervention respectfully requests further direction from the court on the continued GPS monitoring requirements. Now, on September 21st, the DA, Linda Stanley, issued a filing with the court asking the judge to modify Morphew's bond conditions in order to prevent him from residing at a vacant Airbnb property in the Monarch Estates subdivision in Maysville, Colorado. The residence is located hundreds of yards from a home formerly owned by Suzanne and Barry Morphew. Barry Morphew is now staying in that same neighborhood as the Ritters, the couple who were Barry and Suzanne Morphew's neighbors and had actually called 911 on May 10th, Mother's Day, requesting that the sheriff's office conduct a welfare check on Suzanne Morphew since she had never returned from a bike ride. The couple, who probably will be a witness in the trial, have requested that Barry Morphew stay away from them. Now, this comes after a woman, who FBI investigators believe is Barry Morphew's girlfriend, was arrested for trespassing at the Puma Path property where the Morphews lived at the time of Suzanne's disappearance. The woman, a Shoshona darky, was spotted by the current owners of the home on surveillance video, allegedly removing packages from their doorsteps. Now, in her filing, Linda Stanley points out that Barry Morphew currently pays rent at the residence in Salida, Colorado, which is practically down the street from the courthouse and also where Shoshone Darkey lives. Darkey is expected back in court Thursday for allegedly violating the terms of her restraining orders. Morphew's next court appearance is next week on October 13th. We'll see how this works out. The district attorney clearly did not want Barry Morphew out on bond. They are going to come up with every reason to say that he basically cannot reside safely in the county because there's witnesses and that they can't monitor him. Of course, the defense is going to argue, well, Judge, there's no need that he should be restricted just to this county except to see his attorneys and deal with the GPS, and he should be allowed to reside anywhere in the state. He's posted a $500,000 bond, and if he doesn't show up, guess what? That money is forfeited, which the bond should be no greater than reasonably necessary to assure his appearance as well as protect the general public as a whole. We'll see what the judge does. I don't think they're going to modify his bond. If anything, they'll probably loosen it a little bit so that he's not near individuals. And frankly, wouldn't you want him to be monitored even if it was somewhere else? You'd know where he was. He's on the GPS. Listen, I'm telling you, if somebody wants to leave the area and go on the run, all they have to do is cut the GPS ankle monitor off. It's just a big piece of plastic, rubber. It can be cut off. I've seen it done before. All right? Just don't take it with you. Why? Because they charge you for it. All right? All right. Next on the docket, more Gabby Petito news. Now, it's been 2 weeks since Gabby Petito was revealed to have been the victim of, obviously, a homicide. And forensic pathologist Dr. Michael Bodden is weighing in, and he said that the FBI's decision to withhold her remains from her family was very unusual, as was the agency's decision not to release the cause of her death when the manner was announced. Now, I have to agree with Dr. Bodden. The only time I've seen a body not released is when really they cannot determine a cause of death, okay? I had a case where we actually had to ship the bodies that hadn't been turned over to family out to California to be reviewed by a forensic pathologist who also couldn't determine the cause of death. So it makes it very interesting. Dr. Bodden's obviously been around on some very high profile cases, very smart guy. And I have to agree, it's very unusual for the FBI and the coroner not to announce the manner of death. Obviously they ruled it a homicide which is by definition a death by another person, but the manner of death is usually the key factor in the case. So the Teton County coroner, Dr. Brent Blue, found in his initial determination that Petito was the victim of a homicide. The FBI's Denver field office announced that on September 21. Her body had turned up near the Grand Teton National Park back on September 19th, but the FBI office stopped short of revealing the cause of death pending the final autopsy results, and days have gone by without the agency releasing her remains to her family. And Dr. Bodden says the FBI is most likely withholding the cause of death because they want to make sure they don't make any mistakes. But guess what? That could also mean it's uncertain and they're waiting for further information. The plot thickens indeed. Now, the good doctor did say that whatever they've found, they've ruled out accidents, suicide, or natural death that could be the cause. So that doesn't leave a whole lot of other options there as well. It's been previously reported that Brian Laundrie went home to Florida without his fiance Gabby Petito on August 17th. And the Laundrie family attorney, Stephen Bertolino, released this explanation on Tuesday, saying that Brian flew home to Tampa from Salt Lake City on August 17th and returned to Salt Lake City on August 23rd to rejoin Gabby. Now, the attorney said, to my knowledge, Gabby and Brian paid for the flights as they were sharing expenses. Brian flew home to obtain other items and empty and close the storage unit to save money as they contemplated extending the trip that they were on. The statement did not explain anything that happened after August 23rd. Now, everybody knows Brian has been on the run since his parents reported him missing on September 17th. And in a new video, neighbors of the Laundrie say they spotted Brian Laundrie running out of his backyard on the day he was reported missing. A woman known only as Jen said witnesses spotted a man who looked like Laundrie running from his home in Northport, Florida. And the clip uploaded to Twitter, she speculated that he may have run through the nearby woods. And in this video, Jen says that the neighbor got it on their surveillance camera, but it is not known if that video was turned over to the police or not, or whether there's any legitimacy to it. Now, everybody's commenting on this case, and there's a guy by the name of Seth Ferranti. He went on the run about 30 years ago, was facing some federal drug charges, and tried to hide out for several years. And basically, you know, his advice to Brian Laundrie is, you got to turn yourself in, you've got to face the music. Now, Seth Ferrantini, he's now a writer and a producer, and he said that basically, hey, Brian, if you did something to that girl, you got to pay the price. If you didn't do anything to the girl, you have to present it to the jury and trust in your innocence. And he said that, you know, it's tough because in today's world, you have to be able to use cash since a fugitive can't use credit cards, and you have to be really self-disciplined, and you have to get a fake ID, and it's just really tough to go unless you have support of friends and relatives. And everybody knows by now his family is not going to be able to help him wherever he may be, simply for the fact that they are going to be monitored by the FBI and local authorities in whatever they do. It's not like they're going to be able to send a MoneyGram. They know he's wanted. They can't do anything at this point to help him out. So assuming he hasn't hurt himself or big alligator or crocodile got him, he's on his own. Next on the docket, the Zodiac Killer has been identified. A team of specialists who investigate cold cases say that it has identified the Zodiac Killer, one of America's most prolific serial murderers who terrorized communities in the San Francisco area in the late 1960s. The Case Breakers is a team of more than 40 former law enforcement investigators, journalists, and military intelligence officers. The group believes the killer is responsible for slaying hundreds of miles away that was never linked to him. The Zodiac Killer has been connected to five murders that occurred in 1968 and 1969 in the San Francisco area. Unlike most serial killers, the Zodiac taunted authorities with complex ciphers or riddles in letters sent to newspaper and law enforcement. The Case Breakers is now saying it has identified the Zodiac Killer as Gary Francis Post, who passed away in 2018. The team's years of digging uncovered new forensic evidence and photos from Post's darkroom. One image features scars on the forehead of Post that match scars of the sketch of the Zodiac, according to the team. Other clues include deciphering letters sent by the Zodiac that revealed him as the killer. The team believes Post also killed Sherry Jo Bates on October 30th, 1966 in Riverside, California, hundreds of miles south of San Francisco area, and 2 years before the first killings that were linked to the Zodiac. Bates was found dead in an alleyway on the Riverside City College campus after her father phoned police to report her missing. The Case Breakers believe Bates was Zodiac's sixth victim and have tried getting investigators to compare her DNA to that of Post to no one's avail, according to the team. Now, according to a 1975 FBI memo to Riverside Police obtained by the team, the agency said Bates was a Zodiac victim. The team said a series of coincidences connect Bates and Post. Post was an Air Force veteran when he received medical checkups for a gun incident at a hospital located 15 minutes away from Bates' murder scene. A wristwatch with paint splatter on it was collected at the murder scene and is thought to have been worn by the killer. Post maintained homes for more than four decades, the team said. And in addition, detectives found a heel print from a military-style boot, which matched the same style and size of those found in other Zodiac crime scenes of Post. Now this year, the Riverside Police Department offered $50,000 reward for information leading to a conviction in the decades-old murder case. Now, the Zodiac terrorized communities across Northern California. The killer had been connected to five killings, but claimed to have murdered 37 victims. The first of the confirmed Zodiac slayings occurred in December of 1968, when a man and a woman were shot dead in a car in Benicia, California, on July 4th of 1969. Another man and a woman were shot in Vallejo. He survived. Later that year, a couple was stabbed near a lake. The man survived despite sustaining multiple stab wounds. A cab driver was fatally shot in San Francisco that year as well. No one has ever been charged or identified in connection with the slayings. And unlike most serial killers, the Zodiac taunted authorities in letters. Now in 2020, a team of codebreakers cracked a 340-character cipher that was sent to the San Francisco Chronicle by the Zodiac. At the time, the FBI said the Zodiac case remained ongoing. I hope you are having lots of fun in trying to catch me. I am not afraid of the gas chamber because it will send me to paradise all the sooner because I now have enough slaves to work for me. That was in the message. A California woman who lived next door to Post and his wife said she believes he's the Zodiac killer after seeing the evidence collected thus far. Gwen, who declined to give her last name, said Post and his wife babysat her as a child in the 1970s and 80s and he would teach her how to shoot firearms several times a week, but also was controlling and abusive towards his wife. He lived a double life. And what does that say about the 12 undeniable truths from a criminal defense attorney? Yeah, maybe we can put a link up to that. That's right. Everyone is living a second life, at least one point in their life for sure. Zodiac Killer certainly was. Let me know. Guess what? You cannot threaten people, all right? Your free speech rights end at threats, okay? And that includes sign language. A man jailed for allegedly threatening the life of a woman transmitted the menacing message in sign language via a video text, according to the police. Now, Robert Soule was arrested Monday evening on a felony charge and booked into the county jail. He's being held on a $10,000 bond. According to the criminal complaint, Soule sent the victim a video text on September 28th describing in sign language, "I will kill you, okay? I will kill you." The woman told police that Soule, who is deaf, was upset because he believed she took his mail. Soule lives at the Silver Lake Mobile Home Park in St. Petersburg, though the landlord this month filed an eviction lawsuit against him and his ex-girlfriend for non-payment of several months of their $1,340 a month rent. Now, it's unclear exactly if the victim in this particular case knew what was being said or if she had to go have somebody translate it for her. But guess what? It doesn't matter. A threat can be a threat even if the other person never hears about it. I know. It's true. Trust me on this. Don't threaten people, ladies and gentlemen. That's your best free legal advice of the day. Don't threaten people, at least with violence. Okay? Threaten to sue them? Yes. Violence? No. All right. Another teacher's in trouble, and guess what for? A middle school theater teacher is accused of sexually assaulting a 14-year-old former student. Brittany Lopez Murray, 31, was arrested on multiple charges, including lewd and lascivious battery, molestation, and engaging in a sexual act with a child. Now, Lopez Murray started abusing, allegedly, the teen, who had been one of her 7th and 8th grade students at the middle school at which she taught. Apparently, there's a long text message where she expressed her feelings toward him and how she felt about him. Now, Lopez Murray and the student met at Starbucks for breakfast, and then she later allegedly sexually abused him in her Jeep, including after she picked him up from basketball practice and from his home, according to the arrest affidavit. The two allegedly exchanged texts about how much they enjoyed the sexual encounters with each other. This is all according to the affidavit. Police got involved after the alleged victim's sister became suspicious of the way the victim was on his phone, making sure that no one would see what he was doing. The boy's sister was able to get the phone and allegedly saw some explicit text messages and photos. The boy's sister then alerted the boy's father, who searched the phone and also found the text messages and photos. And then the public school district there was notified. They released a statement saying that they are saddened and disappointed over these serious allegations, given that the district takes great measures to ensure our students are educated in a safe learning environment. Now, Lopez Murray is scheduled to be in court and formally charged on November 3rd. Now, we talked the other day about the young ladies that were engaging in contracts that were void for public policy. And I said, you know what? No teenage girl wants to be with some 66-year-old dude. That's just weird, gross, and what have you. Okay? A 31-year-old female wanting to be with a middle school student, that too is also gross and disgusting. Okay? It's not cool. It's not the type of thing where the guys should be saying, "Oh, wow, how come that never happened to me? How come I never had that?" No, they're a minor, they're a child. It's simply a sexual assault. You can't consent at that age, and it's wrong. I don't care if it's a male teacher or a female teacher. It's just wrong. And I have said it once, and I will say it again. Is it just coincidence that there's so many people that are around children that get charged with it? Are they near the children because they want to be close to the children? Just saying, ladies and gentlemen, take it from a criminal defense attorney who's seen a lot of these cases. Common sense. But there is no common sense. But what you should do, ladies and gentlemen, every one of you, is you should go to crimetalksearch.com, get a background subscription service. Literally, your friends, your kids' teachers, check them out. You need to know with whom your family's dealing with. You're going to get criminal background records, property records, marital records. If there's anything in there, sex offender, you're going to find it. Go to crimetalksearch.com. Finally today, our dumb criminal contestant of the week. An 80-year-old upstate New York man by the name of John Sanders allegedly tossed a large amount of nails behind the tires of multiple police vehicles in the Amsterdam, New York Police Department. He wound up getting nailed. How was he caught? That's right. The security footage of him reaching into a green bag and tossing nails on the ground behind the wheels of the five patrol cars. Sanders was then seen getting into his BMW X5 SUV, where the license plate was used to track down the suspect. That's right, Mr. Sanders, you are a dumb criminal contestant of the day. You don't get a pass just because you're 80 years old. You know better, okay? Although no motive was given as to why Mr. Sanders wanted to put these nails down so that the police cars could run over them, it really doesn't matter. It's simply vandalism. And to the police department, really? Come on. And you know videos everywhere, particularly at the police department. Come on, Mr. Sanders. That's why you're a dumb criminal contestant of the day. Congratulations. If you're crowned the winner, you're going to get some free Crime Talk gear. Good luck to you, Mr. Sanders. You're going to need it. All right, that's all we have for you today. It's been one of those days. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.